Alrighty, it being after 4:30, the Board of Public Works meeting is now called to order. May we have a roll call, please?
Joe Clausius,
Present.
Lisa Stern,
present.
Aaron Williams,
Present.
Alder Conklin,
Present.
Alder Uygar,
Present.
Michael Cullen,
I am here.
and Harold Cleams is excused tonight.
Okay. There are no public hearings scheduled for this evening. Do any board members wish to make any disclosures or recusals regarding items on the agenda?
I would like to make a recusal part of the consent agenda number 9. So maybe just the consent agenda, I'll recuse myself.
Okay.
Can we just have it on that one specific number? Otherwise, we have to put it on every single consent agenda item
Yeah,
if you
however you
do it
want to
that
do it.
way.
I guess I just don't know like how. Yeah. It's
It's
number 9 that I
okay. I'll put
step
it on
to.
number 9. Thank
Okay.
you.
Righty. Do we have anybody listed to make public comments for items not on the agenda?
We do not.
Okay. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting from December the 19th?
Don't move. Second.
Got a motion with a second. Do we have any objections? Hearing or seeing none, motion is approved by unanimous consent. So the consent
Excuse me,
agenda. Whoop, excuse
Chair.
me.
Yes.
Yep.
I had my hand up. I just wanted to recuse
Oh.
myself because I wasn't here for the last meeting to for the approval of the minutes.
Okay. You've got that noted, Heidi? Or Joanna?
Yes, I have that.
Okay. The sorry about not seeing your hand raised there, Alder Conklin. Consent agenda this evening includes items number 5, 8, 9, 11 through 13, 15 and 16, 18 through 20, and 24. Item number 14, which was originally on the consent agenda, is being taken off the consent agenda, and we will include that on the regular agenda. So, with that being said, do any board members wish to break any of those items out for further discussion? If not, do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Yeah, move to
Motion.
approve.
Second.
Got a motion with a second. Do we have any objections? Hearing or seeing none, motion is approved by unanimous consent, with the exception of Lisa, who is recusing herself from item 13. It's getting
Item
complicated.
nine. Item
Item
nine.
nine. I'm sorry, Jay. Can't even read my own notes here. Okay. So that takes us to I didn't skip anything, did I? Heidi, you keeping track of me?
Yes. Did you mention the water resource, even though there was
That
nothing on
was
it?
it. Yes, there
Okay.
are no items on the agenda this evening with potential water resources impacts requiring permits. All righty, item number 6. We've got John Evans to talk about change order number 26 to the Metro Transit Hanson Road facility.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'm just going to share my screen quick. Oh, Heidi, can you turn on sharing, please?
You should be able
Okay,
to.
thank you. There we go. So change order number 20. Oh, can you guys see my screen? Just make sure it popped up for you guys.
Yes.
All right, cool. So change order 26 consists of two change order requests. This should be the last change order you see for this project. Where it's project's obviously wrapping up kind of in the last few months. These are some odds and ends that we're still trying to wrap up though. So the first item is adding a water softener for service lane equipment, specifically some pressure washers. The pressure washers they're fairly large pressure washers. I think up to 80 or 90 gallons per minute. They can use quite a bit of hot water. And in order to protect that equipment, it turns out we need a water softener to prevent a lot of lime scaling and premature equipment failure. This is a fairly large number for water softener, but this is also a pretty large water softener, like 2-inch pipes and a high flow rate. The work actually hasn't been completed yet. They're ready to go upon approval. So I actually mistyped that. I apologize. The second item is something that was flagged by our building inspection unit upon final inspections. They noted that we had some mechanical equipment more than 16 feet above the ground. We didn't have an access point that allowed them to only that was below 16 feet. So this item would be adding a roof access ladder that's about 20, I think it's about 28 or 30 feet tall. And all the associated fall protection and safety features with that. There's also quite a bit of engineering built into this because it is a life safety item and there's a lot of safety involved with ladders. So in total, it's about a $65,000 change orders, no time extension, and it would be adding about a little under 0.5% to our contingency, which currently sits just over 7%. I think 7.1, what does it say here? 7.1% allocated of the 8%. And I guess that's what I have tonight. I didn't know if you have any questions. I do have a couple sketches if you wanted to see something in more detail.
All righty. Are there any questions for John on this? Lisa?
Just a question about what's the schedule for this project overall?
So the current contract completion date is March 28th of 2025. Okay. We have just a handful of items that extended the contract to that point. Generally, substantial completion was the end of September 2024. And we've had a few loose ends, you know, that we always seem to have at the end of a project that have kind of lingered. But these are kind of late adds that came up near the end of the project, which is kind of why you're seeing them today. Once we finalize negotiating pricing and scope and all that.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, John, I'm trying to figure out how this all works as far as the soft water. I assume you originally had a soft water unit.
Yes, there is a softener that came with the other service lane equipment. So when they wash the buses, there's some water, cold water that gets kind of mixed. And then there's some inline water heaters. So they needed some softeners for that. But they're not sized for this type of flow rate. So we couldn't utilize them. They're much smaller.
So this new one is going to be on a separate line just for washing?
Correct. Yeah, the pressure washers.
So you've got different water softeners feeding into your water heater.
The pressure washers themselves heat the water. So there's no,
So why do you need a softener?
Because the, if you use hard water, it scales up very quickly.
If it's heated, but it's not heated, right?
No, it is heated. The pressure washers increase the pressure and heat the water.
But how far is that line from the pressure washer to where you? I'm just wondering if this is you're putting in this large unit just for a short run or something, or?
Yeah, it's due to the flow rate that's required for the pressure washers.
Right, but how? You know, you're protecting your lines after it's heated, essentially, as far as water softening.
So the soft cold water goes to the pressure washer, which heats the water.
That's where you got a problem as soon as you hit that heater.
Correct.
Then how far is the run after that?
So the pressure washers are kind of at one end, and then if you go in the surface, it's probably, I don't know, 80 feet maybe. You got to go up and down a little bit too to get there, but yeah.
but this was recommended by the plumbing designer?
By the equipment manufacturer recommended soft water for what we ended up with using. Yep.
Huh. Okay. Any other questions for John? If not, do we have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Got a motion with a second. Do we have any objections? Hearing or seeing none, motion's approved by unanimous consent. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Chair.
Item number seven, we've got Mike Sturm to talk about change order number two to the McPike Park building demolition.
Chair. Hello, everyone. I'm Mike Sturm. I'm the project manager for the McPike Park building demolition project. So this is a project that adds roughly 2.6 acres to McPike Park in near East Madison. And there were three existing structures on that. Well, there's actually four existing structures on the parcel. And this contract was to remove three of those structures and restore the site for future park planning. So the intent was to restore the site to a stable condition with a public engagement happening next year. It is a brownfield site. So the change order before you is the second change order for the contract. And there are essentially, there's three items and a date change, completion date change. So the first item was to remove additional light poles that were on the site. The original intent was to maybe potentially reuse those wood poles, but after earthwork operations and recognizing how shallow they were buried, the intent was just to simply remove them. So that's the first line item in the change order for $1,400. The second item is to extend the concrete curb within the road right-of-way for south of Bedford Street, Baldwin Street. And that was a field decision that was made through the streets inspector just to ensure that we had positive drainage for the curb replacement to an existing inlet. So with building demolitions, it is required that any curb cuts or curb driveway aprons are removed with that building demolition. So there were three drive aprons that were removed, and that's why we have the additional concrete curb. So the bulk of the change order is focused on item three, which is the disposal of contaminated material. So we had done initial soil testing and borings and determined where the majority of the contamination was present in the area that was going to be disturbed. One of the complicating factors is that one of the three buildings is a large storage unit. So that storage unit building was over 20,000 square feet. And we didn't have soil testing below it. And recognizing that this would be a future park space, the specifications indicated that any below grade footings need to be fully removed, not just simply, removed below the surface. And in doing so, once the building was gone and they removed those footings, we encountered a lot more contaminated material. So City Parks worked with the city engineering hydrologist to have that material tested and stockpiled. And it was clearly evident that it would be in the city's best interest that that would be disposed of offsite or wasted offsite. So that's where the additional tonnage has come from as far as material handling. It's a significant increase over what was included in the bid tab, but this is just recognizing that ultimately it was a condition that was below an existing building. And it was really difficult to kind of assess what was present and to what depth it was present and what was the nature of the contamination. We did work with the contractor to waste as much of the low-grade contamination on site per DNR regulations, but it really seemed necessary that this material would be removed off site. So that's the third item. And then the contract extension is just recognizing that there was a period of no work time for the contractor because we're getting this additional material tested. It takes a little bit. They got to take samples, goes to a lab, comes back, gets evaluated, and then we have to reach out to waste management, who manages the disposal sites, to see if it was acceptable material. That took some time. So the the additional time is primarily for site restoration. They've done rough grading, the site stabilized, the erosion control is in place, and come spring, they'll fine grade, seed, and place mat down. So those are the primary components of the change order before you. Happy to answer questions.
All right, any questions for Mike? Aaron.
Hey, Mike, thanks. Where are we at? Where are we extending McPike Park, east or west?
To the east. So it's the corner of Baldwin and East Wilson Street. So it used to be, it was a former Sands property. I don't know if that rings a bell, but it's I can bring it up on here. I can, if I can share my screen.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay, I'm aware. All right.
Yes. So yep.
All right, thank you. No other questions.
Thanks.
Alder Uger.
This may really be a question for Jim Wolf. I have a distinct preference for the change order form that we looked at for 7, because among things besides the description of the problem and some checkoffs for the general category, it does have that analysis of the impact on the contingency. And just in terms of control, I appreciate that. And I was just wondering if there's any way we could get standardized on that form.
We are moving in that direction. So what you saw in 6 or 7,
yeah,
is a new form that's put together and auto-populated out of our Autodesk Construction Cloud software. We're building that out. So that, you know, we're kind of doing engineering projects right now, and as we kind of get things pretty well set, we'll start bringing along some other agencies too. They're getting included now for doing like the payments processing and things too. So it'll be a little bit. So we're in a transition period.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and thank you, Chair, for allowing me to just deal with that minor gripe.
No, I think that's a good point. Hey, Mike, was this a petroleum-based contamination that we're talking about?
I don't have the specifics on the actual contamination, but it did have a distinct petroleum smell. That was one of the key indicators that we had something here that really required off-site disposal. I don't know if so. Bryn Bemis worked with me on that as the city engineering hydrologist. I don't think she was able to attend tonight. I don't know if she's with the city anymore. Jim could probably fill us in on that. But my understanding is it was accepted from waste management as daily cover, which is different than the material that they actually need to bury. So I don't know. I'm afraid I don't know the specifics of exactly what the contamination was, but there was a clear petroleum diesel odor associated with the stockpiled material.
And you just rely on sense of smell to delineate the extent of the contamination, or?
No, it's so the specifications are written that if the contractor, you know, we understand that the excavator, the person running the excavation equipment, probably doesn't have detailed knowledge of really what to be looking for. But one of the things that they need to be aware of is if they encounter material that has a distinct odor to it, to notify the city immediately, which the contractor did. And that's when we can engage our hydrologist to go out, take samples, have the material tested, know exactly what's in it. So, It's just one of those first instances of like, hey, something's not quite right here, right?
Right. So you did have it tested, I guess.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All righty. Any other questions for Mike? If not, do we have a motion to approve?
Move for approval.
Second.
Got a motion with a second. Do we have any objections? Hearing or seeing none, motion is approved by unanimous consent. Thank you, Mike.
Great. Thank you, Chair.
Mike.
Okay. Item number 10, we've got Aaron Canton to talk about. Plans and specifications for Hermina Pedestrian Bridge, or is it Hermina? Hermina.
Yep. Hello, everyone. I've been saying Hermina, but
oh, okay.
If anyone knows more, please correct me.
Let's go with that then.
All right, I'm going to share my screen. Could someone confirm they see a PDF exhibit?
Yes.
All right, great. So today I'm presenting the Hermina Street bike pedestrian bridge that engineering has planned for construction in 2025. This is a bird's eye overview for the bridge. It's generally going to be one of the smaller steel truss bike pedestrian bridges, similar to, oh, there's a few on the Starkweather Creek recently put in with the Garver Path for reference, single span bridges. So this project is fairly long time coming. There's been a strong desire from the neighborhood to get better access east-west across the Starkweather Creek. This is something that directly came from the nearby neighborhood resource group, the Darbo-Worthington neighborhood. A lot of kids in that neighborhood have talked about difficulties getting east-west. You know, they're living over here on the east side, wanting to access stores, library, stuff on East Wash on the west side of the creek. And the existing routes for especially kids biking or walking to do that, they either have to go a fair bit out of their way or make a less than ideal crossing at the Milwaukee Street Bridge, which doesn't have, isn't as safe for definitely bikes and pedestrians. So long time coming, and finally got the permitting and design worked out to move forward with final design and construction. So nuts and bolts of the design. So this is, the bridge is going to connect off of the Starkweather Creek path on the west side here, a little bit of regrading of the path here to make the bridge approach work. Cross perpendicular over the Starkweather Creek. And then a somewhat sharp angle ramp down. This is going to be like a concrete ramped section to get down to Clyde Gallagher Ave. That was determined to be the ramp situation was preferred here because it allows us to have a perpendicular crossing, which is shortens the bridge span, makes it easier to build, more affordable. And it also allows the bridge to come in perpendicular to the Starkweather path, which we determined was a preference here. And then ramp crosses, connects onto Clyde Gallagher Ave and connects to the existing sidewalk on Hermina Street. This is the entirety of the project. There is going to be one additional path lighting added in this area adjacent to the to the path side, as well as some regrading along the Starkweather, really just like 25 feet in either direction of the path or of the bridge, in order to maintain capacity of the Starkweather Creek. And that was a requirement for the hydraulic analysis. A couple smaller tree removals on the easterly bank here. We do plan to include likely some native vegetation for restoration in the areas that get disturbed. Still need to work out those details, but we'll probably match similar to what's out there now. We also have been talking with B-Cycle about putting in a new station adjacent to this bridge along the path, which folks in the neighborhood have been excited about. Yeah, we're looking to advertise for bids this winter, 2025, with construction starting in summer 2025. The lead times on these prefabricated truss bridges is generally 6 months or so. So I envision that the bridge actually getting set probably in the fall. An estimated cost of $650,000. No assessment, so that's all city cost. This board item also includes a budget amendment to move some additional money over for this bridge from the general reconstruction account. Cost estimate was a bit more than initially estimated. I think it was initially estimated quite a few years ago. So part of that could be inflation. And part of that is also some additional costs associated with building the ramp work, adding lighting, things like that. I think that pretty much sums it up. So open up to any questions.
Is there a school nearby, Aaron?
Yeah, what is the closest school?
I think we've seen this once.
You have seen this before. There was a reconstruction project on Hermina Street that this was initially supposed to be a part of. And I brought that project to board probably last spring. And this bridge was included. The bridge had to be delayed due to some permitting that needed to be figured out. Has since been figured out, so we're moving forward.
Gotcha. Aaron, you've got a question or comment?
Yeah, just to offer some insights. Per the origins of some Madison, Wisconsin street names per 2010 Burr Engel, the street is named by Harry Sethoff in honor of his mother, Hermina, pronounced Hermina. So Hermina. There we go.
Thank you.
Okay.
I have no other comments on this project.
Well done.
Thank you.
Alder Uger.
And I'm also trying to remember the earlier look, and I guess it was with regard to the Hermina Street reconstruction. Do you remember if there was some controversy about exactly where that bridge would be placed when we looked at that? Just a vague memory. So if you tell me no, that's fine.
I don't know if I'd strike it to full controversy, but there was some back and forth in the public meetings, and we did talk in detail with the Friends of Starkweather Group, as they're absolutely keenly interested.
Yep. Okay.
But we talked through with them last spring, and it was the same design, same location, and they were
fairly, I thought it was, yeah.
Yeah. I think the concern was just the addition of impervious area along the creek bank. And we did, after that discussion, limit it. But this is about as limited as we would want to go.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that back to my vague recollections. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Do you anticipate bicyclists using this bridge, Aaron?
Yep, I would anticipate bicyclists.
Is that going to be an issue with that 90-degree turn?
It's definitely going to make people go slowly. But that's a fair bit of space there. And I wouldn't, you know, expect super high bike volumes where we've got a lot of people going both directions.
Right. And then you come down that ramp and you dump out onto that street there.
On the B side, on Clyde Gallagher?
Yes. And I'm wondering, no, on the, east side, right? And I'm wondering, is that a high traffic area at all? Or I suppose not, huh?
That's a pretty low volume street. It's not shown, but we'll likely include some additional pavement markings, though. Pretty bare today out there to enhance that crossing.
Right. All righty. If there's no further questions, do we have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Got a motion with a second. Do we have any objections? Hearing or seeing none, motion is approved by unanimous consent. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you, Board.
Just to note, I did send you guys, the person was registered in support of this item, but they did not wish to speak and they're not in attendance. But I just did want to note that.
Yes, thanks for bringing that up, Heidi. I was going to mention that myself and forgot. I'm glad somebody's on the ball. Alrighty, we're all the way up to number 14, and it looks like Brenda Stanley's with us this evening. Is that true?
She's sort of here. I told her since this is kind of a pretty simple request, now they had pulled off a consent, I could handle this for her.
That's too bad.
So, sorry to disappoint you all.
Say something about 14, Jim, or do you...
Really, all I want to say is we would like to change the proposed action here to refer this to the next meeting, which I believe is on the 29th.
I think so.
We thought we were all in agreement with the developer. There's one last piece of this that we've got to kind of tie the bow on. So we would like to refer this to the next meeting and discuss it then.
All righty. Do we have a motion to refer item number 14 to the January 29th meeting?
I'll make the motion.
A second.
Got a motion with a second. Do we have any objections? Hearing or seeing none, motion is approved by unanimous consent. Item number 17. Grant Pocus to talk about oil and waste transfer drop-off site.
Chair, I can kind of give an overview. It's Brian Cooper here. I'm grateful also that Grant Pocos is here in case you have questions about stormwater related items. But I'm filling in for Randy, so I'm kind of a lesser version of Randy. We'll see if I can get you.
We got a high level presentation this evening.
We'll see if he can get you the answers, give you the overview and the answers you need to make a decision here. So I'm going to share my screen. Just a moment here. Okay. Can folks see my screen?
Yes.
All right. It looks like a aerial view.
Right. Yep.
Okay. For some reason, I can no longer see you, but I'll just march along here. Okay. So this project is for the Olin Waste public waste drop-off site, but also for some site improvements at water utility. And I just wanted to give a little bit of a Google Map overview just so people know where we're at. So water utility is here. Streets division waste, Olin Waste drop-off site is here. If any of you folks know, there's a giant sort of dog park here, Quan Park, which is a city park. And then just kind of the last bit of orientation, Dane County's property, kind of events area with the Coliseum is down kind of the south of this site. So as we zoom in, we get to the drawing here, and I'll try to walk through the primary scopes here. But if anybody uses public waste drop-off, there's generally three sites right now that the Streets Division operates. One is on the far west at the South Point Road facility or site. There's one at the east on Sycamore Avenue. And then the third one is here, kind of more centrally located at Olin at 121 East Olin Avenue. And as it stands right now, the public drop-off zone is sits in this sort of zone here roughly. And it interfaces probably too much with the traffic that Streets Division, you know, vehicles and equipment that they need to utilize to operate at the site. So it's not ideal for having the public or the community using this area as well as the Streets Division. So there's a very limited time in which public can drop off. So what we're looking to do for, I guess, a variety of reasons, not least of which is safety for all, is to propose to move the public waste drop off more to the kind of southerly, southwesterly portion of the site. And the way this is going to work is we're going to attempt to separate what will continue to be the Streets Division access to the site from what will be the public access to the site. And so now we're going to move public access off to a completely different street from Olin, and that's called Expo Way. And the public would come into the site through this access way, which would actually cross through the water utility property onto the streets division site. We have this, it's not a racetrack, but sort of a racetrack shaped zone in which the various bends that streets division would manages for waste would allow the public to drop off and then exit back out without ever really interfacing on the main portion of the streets division property. So that's one of the primary drivers of this project. Related, we are have been working with Water Utility to design some additional parking as their operations have expanded. The base bid in this area will be to grade this site for parking, put down the base for parking, but the base bid will include like a filter fabric, soil, and seeding. If we do get good pricing, we will finish this site, this portion of the site, as an asphalt parking lot. Some ancillary, not really, obviously very important to the project, but as a kind of city requirement is the stormwater management. So we're going to have some stormwater, that you can visually see management down here in the southeast corner that will be prepared or will be installed as part of this project to prepare for the parking lot, asphalt parking lot, whether we have it installed immediately or not. There'll be additional stormwater management structure or improvements, directly onto the streets division site. And I believe the last kind of big thing of note is we'll be adding a kind of a designated section here with electrical service for the brand name is Tana, T-A-N-A, Shark, and it's a piece of equipment that grinds waste into smaller particles in order for streets to be able to more efficiently load their trucks for trips to the landfill. The estimate for the project is $2,350,000, including the 8% contingency. And again, if we can get a good bid and we can accommodate it, we'll proceed with the asphalt parking lot at the water utility site as part of the project, the base project. I see a number of folks on the call from engineering that helped, but just I did want to point out that right now this is there is no consultant work, a design consultant work with this. This is primarily or has been engineering design between our facility section along with the street section and engineering and the sewer section and engineering. So and then, of course, also Jack Brody with the landfill work section of our team. I'm a little disoriented here because I can't see you, so I'm going to stop sharing and see if I can maybe find a way to do both at the same time.
Hey, Brian, did I miss that? When were you anticipating this to be constructed?
Oh, yeah, very good question. If it is approved tonight and then eventually a common council, we would be ready to go to bid such that we think we could have a start work letter in approximately April of this year. And then we're going to give a fair amount of time to finish. We think we're going to have a deadline, not at the end of December, but some point in December. I think we found, well, at least in recent years, if we give a little bit more flexibility where contractors can fit this into a schedule versus a very tight timeline, that we possibly maybe would get better numbers that way. It doesn't always work out, but want to try to give that opportunity to give a little more flexibility to the contractors.
Right. And if this goes through, you know, right now that facility is closed, right?
It does operate from time to time. And I believe, and I'm sorry, I didn't introduce everybody, but Charlie Romines from the Streets Division, he's Streets Division Director. He is on the call here. So he probably has more of the specifics. I'm a frequent user of the site, but I don't know it as well as timeline or the durations as much as Charlie does.
No, it'd be handy to have that thing open. You know, the east and west sites are open all year round, I believe. And I think this one closes.
This one, yes, this one closes from essentially the Monday after Thanksgiving until we open in the spring, usually around April, you know, 10, 12, 13, somewhere in there. And then it, currently it's open on weekends and four nights a week, but we can't have it open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. because it's a working waste transfer site. So we open it up. Last year it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 3 to 7 p.m. and then on the weekends. So we're still working on our hours for this year. But
what do you anticipate the new schedule would be? Would this be open all the time? Or
yeah, this is the project that's, you know, continues to go on and on. When we first started talking about this about 4 years ago, we hadn't quite anticipated some of the budget issues, but the full expectation is that we will have three full service drop-off sites that would operate, you know, co-equally. So that's the reason for the investment in this. Because with the growth of the city, we, and the use of these facilities, it can certainly justify three that operate pretty well year round.
Right. All right. Thank you. Alder, you, Gary, you had a...
Yeah, I think probably in those remarks, thank you, Chip, that Charlie has answered the question I had after I read this, which my recollection, I'm having vague recollections sequentially here tonight, but I remember in the budget battle that these operations for this site were on our list of things that we might have to forego, delay, or just give up on. And I take it our sense is we're confident enough about the support now that we don't need to think about delaying the process for the plans and specs and taking bids.
Yeah, I think if you look at the data, it supports from a resident and business use having three sites. And considering we have the money in the budget for this, we have the project queued up and it's been a few years coming. Even if there are relatively, we'll say, short-term budget issues, I think if we don't move forward with this opportunity, 5 year now from now, versions of ourselves will be kicking ourselves for not having gotten this done when we had the opportunity to do it. And bluntly, the operation at Olin in and of itself can use the space as well. So, but the intent is to use that kind of back door as that third drop-off site. They're popular.
It works for me. I remember this one in part because among that long list of things that we had to consider for dealing with a failed referendum, we got a fair number of comments about how much this site needs to be used, or people who wish to expand the hours and so forth. Thanks, Charlie.
Sure.
Aaron, you got a question.
Yeah, is the Quan Park Road, is that a city street or the access to this, or is that closed down from time to time with Alliant events?
It is my understanding that that is a city right of way. It's not like a private, okay, like a private access, or what I guess I'd call it. It's not a private access in any way, just for the sort of Dane County operations back there.
Okay. And then just an observation, the racetrack. So the racetrack's asphalt and then the rest of it's just gravel? Or
yeah, let me pull this back up. I'm sorry, I get a little disoriented because for some reason I can't see you guys when I do this, but
I'm trying to think of myself pulling a trailer, having brush, and then being, oh, I also have a load of styrofoam I gotta get rid of. And then I'm kind of SOL with how I'm supposed to navigate around. But if it's just all gravel and infill, I don't really care.
Okay, so if it's kind of maybe a little bit faint, but hold on a second here. There's a saw, like a saw cut joint here. You see that?
Yeah.
Line. Basically, everything in this zone is asphalt here.
Okay.
We're not going to be able to create a at least a permanent physical barrier between the where the public is and the you know, this the streets division site proper, but there will be, you know, demarcation that this is for kind of public waste, or sorry, public access, and you know they really shouldn't be driving back into these zones back here. So, so when you pull on site, you'll have an opportunity to do the, you know, the various, you know, I won't go through all of them, but there's quite a variety of different, you know, subsets of waste.
Yeah.
Both along here, then along kind of.
I'm just saying I won't do them in the right order.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You
as
and me both.
As long as I can circulate around. That's good.
You and me both.
It might become a little bit like a Big Ben and look, kids, Big Ben Parliament thing if you yeah, get yeah. going around in the in yeah. the track. But,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
And one thing I didn't point out, I don't want to, I didn't mean to like omit it intentionally, but we are going to, I think it's just worth pointing out so people are aware, we are. This is this was a former landfill site. There is, you know, we've investigated as much as I think we can pre-construction to make sure we're doing everything properly. There is going to be an agreement with Parks to take a little bit of that Quan Park property for use in this access road here, but it's very minimal. I don't think anybody is, you know, that uses Quan Park whatever. Ever notice, but it is quite tight up against that that site fencing and that in that area.
Hey Brian, where's the access gate for that road?
For which one?
Where will it be?
Good question. Charlie, do you remember if we have an access gate here?
Well, we don't currently because we don't have a road there currently. That's, you know,
there's
obviously
one on
the project
Quan.
Is putting
that's
that
what
road
I was going to ask because there's one on Quan Road right at Olin.
There is one right up here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. I think Aaron, as he mentioned, you guys sometimes, or someone closes it sometimes for events so that people don't drive into the Alliant Energy Center
yeah.
that way.
Yeah. We
so
do
I was
anticipate
just gonna ask how that was.
We do anticipate there may be a handful of days a year that we don't operate the site because of. Particularly busy events at the Alliant Energy Center, but it won't be many.
Do you have something else there, Lisa? Or?
Yeah, I guess I just wanted clarification. Knowing Aaron's comment, I think my family, we're similar and might have to take more than one route. So you're going to adjust the drawing? Because right now it doesn't, how would you, it would be hard to do
another lap circle. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Because we would probably be doing the same thing because back in the minivan, the other piece is deep in there, right? And you didn't necessarily put it into the vehicle in the right order either, so.
Right. Yeah, I'll have to talk to the team about exactly that issue about taking multiple laps.
I would expect what we'll wind up doing. I mean, this racetrack is pavement markings.
Yeah.
And so realistically what's going to happen is once we open the site, we'll have like jersey barriers and we'll probably play around with the placement of those to allow the best traffic flow because we're certainly going to need to accommodate people who need to take a second lap while indicating to people like this is the way out. Because when they come in, we want them to make a right, and keep moving around to the right. So just like I said, keep in mind that those are markings on pavement. It's not like curbed street where you can't make a move. So,
you wouldn't have to off-road it to get.
No.
That's a very good point. This is there's not level changes here or driving over a curb or driving through gravel or dirt or anything like that. So we would have to just, I think, like Charlie said, sufficiently. Make it an opportunity to go around more than once without having to go all the way back out to the main street and turn around.
And keep in mind where that letter A box is there, that's where an attendant's going to be. So if they need to direct a little bit of traffic to allow for some recirculation, that should be achievable.
All right. And then the intention is to keep the access gate where it's currently located then, right?
This one out here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we have an option. I don't know if we have an option to remove that.
Well, I guess the concern would be if it's on one of these other, the new street, you'd have to have a turnaround if somebody got up there and it was closed or something, I suppose, right?
Yeah, yep.
All right. Well, that'd be great if this goes through. Very nice.
We agree.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are would be excited.
Right. And what's how does this grinder thing work? Is that everything gets ground up or just the vegetation?
Sure. So essentially the idea there, so this is an electric grinder. They do have a diesel option, but we went with the electric option. And so basically we bring our large items that we collect from the street here as well. Those large items, roughly 35% of those are recyclable. 65% of them just wind up in the landfill. The large items that we can grind up, the county can use those as landfill cap and roadway, and we don't have to pay the tipping fee of currently $51 and some change. And so really what we're looking at doing is taking some of those large items that going to landfill, grinding them up, and then using them in that manner, and essentially, you know, getting rid of them for no tipping fee of $51 a ton. We actually anticipate, and we can never provide enough for what the county wants. So we know the county has a need that can't be fulfilled. So there's a demand there. And so our intention is to meet that with a supply, and we should see a low six-figure reduction in our payments to the landfill for material that will be ground up and used, like I said, as landfill cap versus just regular waste. So that's the idea. It's been a couple of years in the making as, you know, supply chains are jammed up and trying to get this thing underway, but
right,
we're pretty excited about what that'll mean for us.
Is the cost of that thing included in the cost of the project?
That machine was bought a couple of years ago.
Oh,
so that's been paid for.
Right.
So
it's sitting in Brian's garage right now,
grinding up all sorts of things.
Yeah.
So is there a big electrical draw on that thing then?
Yes. thus the delay, thus for the very special equipment that has not been easy to procure in this brave new world post 2020, but it's going to be fabulous when we get it up and running.
We really should have a party out there.
Yeah,
I mean, this thing is going to be, you know, I genuinely am excited to see this thing in operation.
Right. Maybe we can have it at your house there, Brian. You can start it up in the garage.
The neighborhood would love it.
We could all throw something in. Is that how we welcome this thing?
Yep.
Exciting.
Instead of smashing a bottle on the side of it, you throw something in the top.
Totally. Grind it up. Totally. Did you see the little video? I think I was still sharing my screen. Okay.
That's impressive.
Yeah. If you want to be entertained later, type in Tana Shark into the YouTube and you can see all sorts of interesting things being ground up.
Oh, I bet. All righty. Any other questions for Charlie or Brian? If not, do we have a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Second.
Got a motion with a second. Do we have any objections? Hearing or seeing none, motion is approved by unanimous consent. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Board. Have a good evening.
All righty. Wow. I think we're on number 21. Do we have any appeals regarding pre-qualifications of contractors?
We do not.
Item number 22, discussion of transfer of urban forestry responsibilities to the Board of Public Works. I think we know them. We have Sarah Lerner.
Actually, I think Isaac is maybe going to help out initially with assistance from Charlie, if needed.
Yes, I think that's the plan. So, evening. My name is Isaac Mathias. I'm the legislative analyst with the Office of the Common Council. I'm here to give you an update kind of on our boards, committees, and commissions streamlining efforts. On December 23rd, I think you all should have received an email from Deputy Mayor Christy Baumel. And within that email, it had a memo addressed from the mayor and Council President Figueroa Cole kind of regarding these efforts. This memo is also attached to this item in Legistar. So if you don't see it in your email, hopefully you can access it as needed. Just for a little background, for several years, the Common Council has been working on a plan to implement or to improve and streamline our BCC process. This began with the Task Force on Government Structure in 2017 and has been kind of going through this process for the past seven, now coming up on 8 years. And ultimately, the goal for this project is for the size and functions of Madison's BCC system to enable a couple different things: adequate staffing per committee so all committees can be high functioning, a clear and efficient path for residents to engage in the legislative process, and efficiency in city processes and decision making. Throughout this project, we've been working to review mission statements, activity data. We've gotten a lot of input from alders and staff about all committees throughout the city. As a result, we're proposing a series of recommended changes to BCCs throughout, kind of based on this work. And so tonight, I'm just here to talk with you about one of these proposed changes, which, as mentioned, is moving the citywide urban forestry review, also commonly known as or referred to as tree board responsibilities, from the Board of Park Commissioners via the Habitat Stewardship Subcommittee to you all, the Board of Public Works. Superintendent Romines is here and can share a bit more about some of the logic for this recommendation. So I'll pass it over to Charlie now.
Sure. Thank you, Isaac. So for those of you who are unaware, the forestry unit resided in parks time in memoriam. I was part of that from 2011 until January of 2018 when I went over to the streets division. In January of 2020, we moved forestry from the parks division over to streets, making streets and urban forestry, just so I could say I manage stuff, STUF. From there, the thought was that we would make this change at some point. At first, we wanted to make sure that the change did in fact stick. And then of course, the events of 2020 happen and just other priorities get in the way. And so we've got really about 5 years now. Forestry as part of the streets division is working extremely well. With Ian Brown, the city forester, has been on board now for 18 months. We've been talking about this change really since he's been there. So the tree board is currently housed within the Habitat Stewardship Subcommittee of the Parks Commission. Last week, we went to the Parks Commission, had conversation with them. It's just like here, it was informational, but they were very positive and open, you know, to making this change, given that a couple of things. The forestry has, in fact, moved to the streets division. Parks board will retain, you know, responsibility for tree issues in the parks. And really the forestry division has been moving over a period of time, and certainly more so in the last several years. There's much more an intersection with engineering than with parks. And most of the issues that our residents have concerns with around trees are really at the intersection of forestry and engineering and not really parks. And so when you talk about the right-of-way projects, stormwater, street reconstructs, you guys already have a lot of this going on anyway, just by nature of your relationship with the engineering division. To give you some idea, in the 18 months that Ian has been here, we've gone to Habitat Stewardship twice. Once was for an annual pruning permit. The utilities come and apply for that permit. The tree board approves that. In my time with forestry, there's usually 0 to 2 public registrants. Usually moves pretty quickly. And then there's an advisory role where the city forester would bring out the annual tree species list. And so that's an opportunity to, you know, advise on, you know, ask questions, why this tree, not that tree, that type of thing. It's also an opportunity for our residents, if they wanted to have a say on questioning why you've included this and not that. And again, in my long history with forestry, that generally zero to one registrant to speak through. And that's really what the tree board comes through. You might occasionally get, once every blue moon, every handful of years, you might get they might need a permit for a house move or something like that. But it's really, I would say that this group here already is involved in some way or another with a lot of the heavy lifting issues where, like I said, trees get swept up into big city projects and become emotional, become of a great concern to residents. So I'm certainly happy to, you know, answer any questions you all have, and we'll go from there.
All right. Any questions for Charlie or Isaac on this issue? Alder Ugar?
Yeah, really, this isn't that much a question. Anybody who knows what I've been involved in this past year knows that I love controversy. Kidding. But the whole importance of tree cover to sustainability in the public's interest, and that, you know, I think is already reflected when we're looking at whether it's a traffic engineering project or a stormwater engineering project. I think it's just become routine for this group to be able to see the commentary on, here are the trees, we don't have a choice, we've got to remove, here's what we can do, here's where things can be replaced and restored and so forth. So I just want to say I certainly agree that this makes as much sense in BPW as it does anyplace else. Thank you, Chair.
Aaron.
Yeah, appreciate it, Charlie. Thanks. I'm not opposed to the move. I can say, as someone who had to go to the tree board previously before COVID, Charlie hit on it. Like, it's more of an emotional thing. And I suppose we're kind of dealing with that now anyways on a lot of these street reconstructs. I mean, trees always come up. So we haven't really had a lot of emotional things to address on those, but I think it is appropriate. And as you know, I'm always pushing for them, and maybe this is our chance to get trees closer than 40 foot on center. But would Ian come to this commission and lead all those conversations, or is that how this is anticipated going forward, or when there's agenda?
Yeah, this would be the board that Ian would kind of work through. If there are, you know, agenda items that touch on trees, this is where, you know, Ian would come here. So, you know, the short answer of that is yes. And so, you know, for example, you know, some of those projects that really intersect engineering projects, you know, as we're all aware, quite often impact trees. And so any types of, you know, approvals or conversation would be had here. I think the nice part for a resident is all that conversation can be had here versus going to another board or committee that ultimately doesn't actually have any say on the project. And so I think that, you know, dovetails nicely with this whole idea of trying to consolidate how many boards and commissions the residents have to go to, not just staff, but the residents too, to where decisions are made, and whole decisions are made, not just perhaps just not considering always the forest for the trees, for lack of a better term. So yes, this would be the place Ian comes. Okay. You know.
All righty. Appreciate it.
Alder Conklin.
Thank you, Chair. And this is not really a question, this is just a statement, just really giving my full support for this. We know that there's way too many boards, committees, and commissions, so consolidating them and getting them more concise. And like Charlie just said, we don't want people running to different commissions or committees, and just having to follow that process is hard enough as it is. So I'm in full support of this. I hope that this board will really support this because it is important for us as alders to be able to do our job and not have to be split between, you know, 5, 10 different committees for everybody. So I would appreciate if you guys can support this and make our lives a little bit easier as well.
I am all for making your job easier, Alder Conklin.
Thank you so much.
Joe, you've got a question or comment.
Yeah, well, a couple comments for Charlie here. Actually, the responsibilities that you took for forestry the last 2 or 3 years, I mean, to me, that's been seamless. I haven't noticed any change. Well, for one thing, you've got more room for equipment storage and a more choice variety of equipment when something does come up on here. The only thing I kind of wondered about was a lot of contact a brand new homeowner first has with anything with forestry is the old, we still will put out a city tree. Of course, they get assessed for it. That program is still there yet. Now, has that actually been part of this or is something like that, or does that stay with parks? Just that initial tree thing.
No, that's part of the forestry unit that came over with forestry. So we do, we handle the assessments and do those initial plantings. Yes, sir.
All right, on it there. And I know we've talked about this the last 2 or 3 years. We had so much of this, some streets where every tree on the street, new subdivision was the same type. Well, we kind of know what's happened. Like I had that red oak or whatever it is out here, where the roots heave out of the ground. Well, I think about half of the homeowners on our street, those have been replaced. Do you pretty much make it now that you definitely alternate in a subdivision? There isn't going to be a row upon row, the same type of tree, a linden or a basswood. Or...
We're typically trying to do at least three different types on any given block, at least three different types.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. Yeah, I just general questions I had there, but I think this, I definitely will support this on here. I think this is a great idea. And as the alderman pointed out too, makes their job easier. So thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. If there's no further questions, thank you very much for the presentation, Charlie and Isaac. And certainly forewarn Ian, if he's going to be the liaison, that this is a pretty aggressive board. So he's a little action, maybe. But thank
He'll
you.
Be ready.
Thank you for the presentation.
Be forewarned. He likes to talk.
Yep.
Get him going on trees at your own peril.
Alrighty, moving on to item number 23, acceptance of the stormwater utility vegetation plan. I think we have Sarah Lerner now.
There we go. Hi, everyone. So I don't have a presentation today because it is the exact same presentation I gave last time because we didn't receive any comments between the meetings. The two comments we received previously we have uploaded to the legislative item. And so no changes have been made to the draft plan. And I am just presenting it here for acceptance for a final plan.
All righty. Any questions for Sarah? Aaron?
So upon further review, no, I think it's really the plan is actually excellent, I think, as it's laid out. But I did see a public comment. I'm wondering if you're going to do anything with it, which may seem to make some sense ecologically, but I'd not heard of it. But burning not everything all at once.
We do that anyway. Yeah.
Okay. So yep. That's how it is addressed. All right. Yeah, I thought I had one other comment, but I don't remember what it is right now. It comes back to me, I'll let you know. But no, okay. Well done. Thank you.
There was one other comment from the public, right? Regarding
there are two emails from the public.
Contacting WISDOT regarding Panito Creek.
Yes. So that person is a former engineer who disagreed with one of the experts' assessment, which is not uncommon. So I think that was just them letting us know that.
Is that something you typically do, is coordinate with other agencies that might have potential involvement, or how does that?
Well, in this particular case, for vegetation management, we had hired consultants to kind of come up with a vegetation plan. And the consultant that was a fluvial geomorphologist made a statement that Pinito Creek was like an intermittent stream. And so this engineer, us professional experts rarely like to agree. This engineer is disagreeing with the fluvial geomorphologist and said it wasn't really an intermittent stream. It's been an agriculture ditch since I worked at the DOT, is my interpretation of their email back.
Gotcha. Okay. All righty.
I did think of my other comment. It was related to like the Mineral Point fields, which are turf. And
yes.
What? Right now they're turf. Yeah. So is there any going forward, will there be fields, play fields for use as stormwater utility retention?
So we have a few situations where that happens. The play fields are one. That is a very unique situation, and I believe that project is up for redevelopment. So I don't know if that'll be the long-term strategy. I think that actually the soccer, there's a different organization that mows it. There's one other site where I can think of that is being built now that is like this, and that is at Birchwood Point on the far west side, where because of developer and parkland requirements, the developer didn't have enough space to do both. And so we are kind of combining the site functions so that parks can be kind of used as a place for stormwater additional storage if they have to be in certain flood situations. So in those, yes. That rarely happens, though.
It just, yeah, it seemed like a good multi-use. I mean, I wouldn't want to necessarily play on them after all the geese and stuff I see on them and whatnot.
Yeah, right.
Maybe it's not
yeah.
the best, but it does seem like a decent sort of dual use. If
sometimes we do it when it works.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
So does that require a different turf than is what you're saying, Aaron or Sarah? Or what's the...
No, the stuff at Mineral Point. Yeah, no, not that I know of.
Well, I'm not going to speak on behalf of parks, even though I worked there for 10 years, but maintaining any sort of athletic field turf is much more rigorous than what stormwater utility would do.
I was just going to comment on that too. My kids have played on those fields, and I would just say the other issue, not only just maintaining that turf, is not just the geese, but there's also lots of debris after a storm that one of the things we'd have to do as a parent or a coach is go and clean up, bring your own garbage bag and clean that up. So it's got its pluses and minuses. Yeah.
All righty. Any other questions for Sarah on this topic? If not, do we have a motion to accept the vegetation management plan?
Motion to accept.
Second.
Got a motion with a second. Do we have any objections? Hearing or seeing none, motion is approved by unanimous consent. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
All righty. Item number 25.
All right. So this is kind of an introduction for you all. I'll share my screen here quick. So actually, it was kind of nice that Alder Uguerre had asked the question earlier about the change order forms and things, and I could kind of introduce that we've been switching up our systems. And as we're getting into our new system, we are bringing back our non-BPW change order report. So probably maybe 9 months ago or so, we stopped providing this monthly report to the board. Because our new system wasn't quite ready, but we're entering all the information in there. And so we weren't keeping the old system up to date, and we just didn't have really the capability with the information and where it was and the systems we were using to provide you this. So if you all remember, we do have a change order policy that kind of dictates which individual change orders come to the Board of Public Works for approval. Some typical guidelines are any change orders over $20,000, anything that includes a time extension on the contract, anything over the project contingency are the main points. There's a couple of other things that are floating in there too. But outside of the ones that we're presenting on and discussing with the board, we do have change orders that fall below those thresholds that are approved at the staff level, primarily with my final sign off. And so this is just kind of introducing you to the new format of how that report will be coming to you monthly. Kind of breaks it, separates it into sections for each contract and lists out the change order, a brief description of what the change order was, dollar amounts, percentage of the contract, just kind of keeping track of some of those elements too. So I think that's all I had for you. I don't know if you had any questions about the report processes. Oh, one other quick thing before I finish. I think our intention going forward is this would probably be on the consent agenda item when it is coming to the board. It's probably the first meeting of each month. We'll include it on there, just kind of the report as seen. We're always happy to answer whatever questions you may have about any items on here too.
Alder Conklin.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Jim, for bringing this to us. I really appreciate it. I do like the details. One of my questions is still going to be if we can get like a running tab, like on how much money is left when you switch from one account, you took it out of another account. Like, is there any way that we can still have that information monthly, or, you know, is that easily accessible for us?
So the running tab is primarily housed in the city's financial system, being Munis, which also handles like payroll and a variety of other things. Whereas a lot of our contracting things and all of our change orders and things are housed elsewhere, just mostly primarily because of staff access, but also capabilities. Like our financial system is not built to manage public works contracts and construction activities and things. And so getting that running total, while it is possible, it is not an easy ask either. But it is something that before a change order comes to you, or before even a project is coming to the Board of Public Works for approval, it is something that we're comparing relative to budget authority that was provided and, you know, what our cost estimates are and things that we're coming to you with. And like Aaron Canton had mentioned earlier on the Hermina, I always called it Hermina too, bridge. If something's not aligning, we also do a budget amendment to make sure that we do have the budget authority too. Sometimes that is on the same resolution as the item that you're seeing, or sometimes that's something that separately goes to finance, as the finance committee is in charge of kind of managing that type of a resolution too.
Okay, and the ones that you're showing us right now, is this for the same project?
So you'll see here, it has the project contract number and project name.
Okay.
And then within this box would be change orders specific to that contract that happened over the course of the last month.
Okay. Because some of the, I see. So a missing bid item or additional bid item means that something wasn't bid on correctly, or you guys forgot to put it in the bid when you
we forgot to include it, or it was something that we weren't anticipating and had to add in. So there's a couple of, I think we have like missing bid item, additional field item, field conditions, differed, actual versus estimated quantities differed. So a handful of kind of typical scenarios that would be showing up on this report for the specific items.
Okay, okay, okay. And then I see the credits are added down here as well. So,
Okay.
I see. Okay, yeah, thank you. I just wanted to see like how we're supposed to read these as well. So, but I understand. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I think this will be good to have access to. And this is something that, do you have an annual compilation? Not that we would necessarily need to see that, but.
I don't think we've ever done that. It's something, especially with how we're building our new system, we could do if you really wanted to see it.
No, I'm not sure we do. I'm just wondering if there's some value to having that as far as making decisions on how well your projects are designed or managed.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it is something to keep in mind. We are pretty excited about the capabilities here and how the system is kind of putting everything together, that we can do some analysis beyond that, even on a project by project basis, or maybe we can find trends.
Right.
It's like there's something that we're consistently missing or something like that that we need to tighten up. So it could be a variety of things.
Right. Yeah. No, this looks good. Okay. Any other questions for Jim on this one? If not, thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you.
I think we're at the end. Could it be? Not even 6 o'clock. Hey. You have something to say there, Joe? Want to extend this out a little bit, or you want to make a motion to adjourn? Anybody?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
All righty. We got a motion with a second. Thank you, everybody. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Take care. Take care.
Bye. Yep.